Hey, Chicago. What do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. We're going to talk baseball with national baseball expert David Brown. David, how are you?
Hi, Andy. I'm good. Just getting through the Chiefs parade in Kansas City, so yeah. I'm ducking for cover.
And before we recorded, we talked that you were there.
I was there. I wasn't. I'm not a suspect, but I was me and my kids.
Not quite.
What's that?
Are you a person of interest? You haven't made it up to suspect?
Hardly at all in life and not in the investigation.
Okay.
Yeah, my kids and I were there. The shooting happened, and I was going to call it shenanigans, but that's not.
No.
We weren't anywhere near when or where it happened, so. Okay. Yes.
The sad reality of, I'll admit, every time I see a big gathering like that, it's always in the back of your mind that it could happen.
The thought occurred to me once during the parade that, yeah. Hey, this would be a good opportunity for some terrorism. Really.
As I told you before we started, I applaud Jed Hoyer's attempts to keep Cub fans safe. But no threat of a parade.
Right. You can't get hurt if you don't play.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Jed. So I guess that brings us to our first topic, which is there are some fans, not just Cub fans, I'm sure any fan of a team who has not signed one of the key free agents, they're upset at Scott Boras. Does that seem like the right guy to be mad at if your team hasn't signed
like
a player
easy,
you want?
I mean, he seems like an easy target. Obviously, he's the face of some of those players, and I guess players in general when free agency happens. I understand – like some of the reasons why people are upset that, we're kind of dragging out the rosters and it's like, can we do something already? And let's go. And spring training started. And I get all that. I blame, however, the man or the men on the other side of the negotiating table who are, I think, pretty obviously it's a soft collusion, if not a hard one. And they're obviously trying to keep costs down, which is their prerogative. But I mean, let's be real about it and call them out on it. And that's what baseball owners are doing. And it is pretty obvious to me that that's what's happening. And it's not just Scott Boras being greedy. There's everyone else being greedy. So that's what I think.
I mean, if I were a baseball player and I needed to hire an agent, that would be the guy I would want to be my agent.
And even if he's not your agent, or maybe for whatever reason you don't like him, personalities, or maybe you don't even like his style or his methods or whatever, Scott Boras is good for players. Yes. Even if they're not his, because he makes sure the owners spend more of the money that they have. I don't understand. I never understand. You know, we need a salary cap and all that. Why would you want those clods to have more of the money? What is that going to give us? That doesn't give us anything. We get nothing out of that.
I mean, I've always been of this opinion. I've only recently figured out how to voice it. That as a fan, I don't care what I'm a fan of the Cubs. I don't care what the Cubs payroll is. What I care about is how many good baseball players they have on their roster. And if they have a lot of good baseball players and it's cheap, well, good for you. I'm happy for you. If they have a lot of good players and it's expensive, I don't really care. And if you don't have good players, then no matter what your payroll is, it's not enough. You need to spend more to get more good players.
We can all go. You've explained it. Good night.
Yeah. But it's like Brewer fans trying to take you. Well, yeah, we made the playoffs. We lost the first round, but look at our payroll. We only paid. It's like, really? You're all excited that your billionaire owner, Mark Antanasio, who's a billionaire just like the other guys, just chooses to have a lower payroll because of the size of the market. You don't get extra points for winning with less money. You just, over time, you just win less.
It's not like some video game where maybe that's a part of it, you know, where you can, I assume that the simulations and all that have that option where you get extra points for a rotisserie draft, a fantasy draft, where, you know, you have a salary cap and there's, it's not, I mean, yeah, it's not anything to hang your hat on. There's no real trophy for that, even though they passed around a trophy for keeping the winning arbitration.
Yeah, that's great. The fans that seem most upset by it seem to be of the opinion that, let's just use Cody Bellinger as an example, that Scott won't let Cody Bellinger sign with the Cubs unless the Cubs pay X amount of money. And it's like, do you right. not understand that that's not, do you don't understand that's not how that works.
Right.
Who works for who? The agent works for the player. One of the reasons players like Scott is that he'll take all the shit. You know, a prominent player can change teams, and if Boris is their agent, he'll be the one who gets blamed by the home fans who lost their favorite player instead of the player. Bryce Harper went from the Nationals to the Phillies in the same division, and Nationals fans were just mad at Scott Boris.
Right.
Well, it just allows Bryce to change teams and not have to take as much crap, which is a great service that your agent is providing to you.
Another reason, you know, you asked, well, why, you know, you kind of asked, well, why wouldn't every player want him to be your agent? There's another good reason right there, what you just said. Yeah. And it's not, there are, you know, if you, I know the internet is a hard place to find facts, but if you look at Boris's history, there are several examples of where, you know, the player made it a point to say, you know, I want to sign for this amount, and maybe it isn't the most, you know, if you just look at the history of Scott Boras's signings, they're not all he absolutely had to get top dollar. Some of them are like Steven Strasburg comes to mind, and you know, who knows like what a hometown discount is worth, but it's not true that he won't let people sign literally and figuratively. It's just you know, choosing to believe a certain narrative because it makes you feel better, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it's a narrative started by owners a long time ago now. He's been an agent for quite a while. But Jerry Reinsdorf was like the first prominent one who basically told whoever the GM was, probably Ron Shula, probably not Hawk, we're not even going to negotiate with Scott Boris over if a player has him as the agent, we're not going to negotiate with him. Well, that's great. You're basically just going to shut off access to some of the best players in baseball because they have an agent who will push you to pay them what they think they're worth instead of what you have decided that they're worth.
Right. And it's not like, you know, the owners in many different forms don't have a history of salary suppression at every turn. It's not like, and it's not even like, I don't know, I mean, I would rather compete and spend as much money as I could. On the one hand, maybe I don't blame them to not wanting to spend every last dollar. But let's acknowledge that that's where it's coming from. It's coming from them.
Yeah.
It's not Scott Boras's fault. No.
I mean, if Cody Bellinger told Scott today, I want to go back to the Cubs, work it out. Scott would lose leverage and would go to Jed, and the two of them would actually work out a deal.
Right. Would,
unless Jed really doesn't want to pay Cody anything. You know, he's decided he wants to use the Boris thing as a smokescreen because they've decided they don't want to bring him back, and they'll just be able to blame, you know, the unrealistic demands of the agent. If the Cubs really are interested, Cody could tell Scott, make it happen, and Scott would go cut a deal, and Cody would be prancing around the Cub outfield early next week, probably. But there's just this idea, I think, that, you know, oh, God, he changed agents to Scott Boras. Now we're never going to be able to keep him. Well, you're probably going to pay more than you were. That's why he changed. agents. So, and it, now it just happens that as there's still a fair amount of free agents out there, even though everybody reported to camp yesterday. I mean, teams that weren't there already, everybody's there now.
Right.
And he's got four of the best ones. He's still got, he's got Bellinger and Matt Chapman, and he's got two pitchers. He's got Snell and Montgomery. And you'll even hear stuff like, well, I think the Cubs will probably get one of those four. You know, whichever one, whichever one's the last one, it just has their hand out. And four, please sign me. It's like, I hope it's a little more strategic than that. Oh, we'll just see who's left. That's who we'll take. What do you think, guys? That sounds good.
So I've heard a lot of people bringing up the idea of, for some reason, a deadline to sign free agents.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this. I'm glad you brought this up.
Well, okay. Well, I wanted to know what you – I mean, I haven't heard a good argument yet as to, A, why it's necessary, really, and B, how it wouldn't serve as a anti-player, you know,
yeah,
salary suppression.
Right.
Well, you have an idea?
No. Well, here's the question I want to ask you. What happens if you don't sign by the deadline?
Right.
Do you have to go to Korea?
Yeah, say, oh, Japan? You're unemployed.
Yeah.
I mean, why would we want the best players not on a team if possible? Why is that good?
I think the reason there's not a deadline is the owners couldn't figure out what the what happens after the deadline.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the trade deadline, where if it passes, now you just can't make a trade.
Right.
This is a free agent. This is an unemployed worker who would like to then work for your company. And you've said, well, no, you can't sign here because we don't have a thing. I mean, would they do it like, what was the, like if you offer arbitration and the player doesn't sign, I forget why Craig Kimbrel couldn't sign until something passed and then he couldn't sign until the All-Star break.
Right. Or what, it wasn't it May 1st? That I remember that May 1st.
Yeah, maybe it was. And then he let himself, he had to go get back in shape and he didn't sign until June. I don't remember what that was, but there was a thing that happened that then he couldn't sign. You wouldn't do that. I mean, that's, you can't have, you know, 60 players who now just have to hang out for 2 months before they can go sign a contract with somebody.
Yeah, so they've added a bunch of like replacement players for a while. I don't know how that improves the product.
And I think the thing that got owners, or not even, it's really, it's baseball writers are the ones who want the deadline because this sucks. You know, having the news just kind of barely just kind of, you know, leak out over a month. the lockout a couple of years ago served as kind of a de facto deadline. Like Marcus Stroman had to hop on a plane and get to Chicago to get his physical done because he wanted the certainty of a deal before the lockout because he didn't know what it was going to look like afterwards. And so he signed that deal. And there were several players who signed deals in those last couple of days before. And they're like, see, this is great. It's like, okay, well, good. You just have to threaten the lockout every year. That's what's going to, that'll trigger a deadline. And I do wonder go ahead.
Nah, people come from a place of wanting to punish the worker. And, you know, it's part of that primal feeling that all this is a bunch of guys playing a game. So it's like, you know, I'd play for free. Yeah, because you suck and nobody would, you know, watch you play person. So it's, you know, that's kind of where it stems from. And you know, putting somebody in their place kind of thing.
It's odd to me, though, that it's that there's still so much like, I guess maybe it's not odd. I mean, you're fans of a team, and when you get spurned by a player who you wanted to be on your team, you lash out at the player. I could see in the olden days, back with the reserve clause, where you basically just, you could force guys to play for you or play for nobody.
Right.
That when that changed, I could see where there were some baseball fans who were like, oh, this is terrible. You know, if your team lost a couple of good players and you never had to worry about that before, you're pissed.
Right.
That's 50 years ago. So how many of us that are baseball fans even remember that? So it's just, it's odd to me that the attitude has still like lingered, but it does. And it, maybe they're just the ones who yell the loudest. But you know, I don't like it when guys that on my, you know, that play for the Cubs leave to go to other teams, but I always understand it. I mean, I was even forgiving of Dexter Fowler went to the Cardinals, for Christ's sakes. I was like, oh God, no. But he got a lot of money and the Cubs weren't going to give it to him. So screw the Cubs. You know, he would have stayed if they'd have paid him anywhere close to that, and they didn't want to. They were hot to trot to get to Albert Almora, and that worked out great. Hell, they tried to do it the year before. And he showed up at spring training and was like, I don't want to play for the Orioles. I really don't. They gave me a contract. I almost signed it. It's my agent has it on his phone. I can click on it. I don't want to. Theo, could you give me some money? Okay. It's just... And I think now that's what all Cubs fans are waiting for. It's like the moment where all of a sudden the cameras, there's Cody prancing around in the grass. And it's like, oh, thank God he's back.
Like a puppy.
And with the Cody thing, and with, we're not even sure that the Cubs have ever made an offer.
Right.
It's not even like he's got one sitting there that he just won't, that he's like, oh, I guess we can do better than this. They may have only talked in very broad, you know, like, well, maybe this many years and maybe this much money, and you don't have anything hard to go by. Because I think they're clearly at this point waiting, just hoping nobody else really is that interested, and they get him cheap, and they get him for
well,
4 years
we're like,
and they want.
We're like half a step away from, I mean, it wouldn't happen because Boris is the agent, but we're half a step away from the agent giving the Cubs a blank check and saying, hey, sign Andre Dawson for $500,000 or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's Boris can't be that worried yet because the mystery team hasn't floated out yet. When the mystery team comes out, that's when, you know, things are getting, he's fishing. That's when that happens. It's
right.
It sounds like it's down to the Cubs, the Blue Jays, and the Angels. And
are these the three places where Cody's fiance or wife has Instagrammed from?
I don't know.
Is that how we know that? I know one was Toronto. That's what. Yeah. That's the thing I'm referencing. And people thought, well, that's the Blue Jays are up because.
Yeah. And of those three, the only, you know, Boris, when he gets to this point, what he really likes to do is go right to the owner. You know, done with them, done talking to the GM or the president of baseball, whatever. Going to the owner, we're just going to get this done.
Right.
And Artie is the kind of guy who, I mean, he's done it to him before. He saddled him with players. I'm pretty sure he's Anthony Rendon's agent, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, that guy had to, like, wheel him in on a, you know, wait a minute. How many casts does he have? Don't worry about it. He's fine. It's all cosmetic. So I mean, that I think is to me, the biggest threat to the Cubs getting him back, other than the Cubs just saying, you know what, we really don't want to do this, are the Angels. And if you're Cody, he played for the Dodgers. Do you really want to go play for the Angels? You know, you're going to be back in the same town. Looking across town at the,
it like, is
oh
the
my God, they're
county.
Good. Oh, well.
No, you probably want to have the Angels as that leverage factor, yes, rather than, because
right,
it doesn't seem like a fun time right now.
No.
No Shohei even. No. So.
No. And then there was some thought about maybe the Giants would be in there because Farhan is like throwing money out into, please take my money. Jorge Soler finally took some of his money. But to me, that's the worst possible park for Cody.
Yes.
I mean, those opposite field gap power is just outs there over and
that's
over.
That's why Bonds bulked up so much.
He was just trying to, Barry just wanted to hit one into that big glove.
Right. I just want to get it there. How big do I have to get?
So, one of the guys from Chuggo, who was out at spring training, and I assume they went to spring training just to get the Cubs' thoughts on what the Bears should do with Justin Fields.
I'm getting over a cough. Be careful.
They got a little sensitive about the criticism that they went to Vegas to cover for the Super Bowl, and all they asked anybody about was Caleb Williams and Justin Fields.
And then they wrote stories like, the Super Bowl's coming, but the Bears are the talk of the Super Bowl.
It's like, yeah, you know what? They're not. No. They're,
I'm sorry. We didn't do that ourselves.
But anyway, so he asked, Ryan Herrera asked Nico Horner a very sensible question. Is this Cubs team better than last year's? This is Nico's answer. I'm going to take a deep breath. Yeah, I mean, I think all of us are asking that question individually and as a group. I think it's up to us to answer that just as the season plays out. I think anytime you go too deep in predicting baseball, it's usually not very accurate. Obviously, you want the best possible team you can have on the diamond, and there's still players out there. So I don't know exactly what that'll look like. But as far as the group that we have here right now, I think we have definitely what we need to compete as well as make a lot of improvements internally. And I'm just excited about the mindset that the guys have about that. So I characterize that,
as the longest no I've ever heard.
Yeah, I call that a Stanford no. It's too bad John Lester's not around. I think you just asked John. Are you guys better? Fuck no. We're a lot worse. I don't know what the fuck we're doing. So, last night, Dave Kaplan tweeted out a link to, he does the recap. I don't know if you've ever seen the recap. Somebody pays him to go on YouTube and scream at the camera scream at his phone for 3 minutes about whatever happened that day. And then he has a recap podcast about the Cubs with Gordon Wittenmeyer, even though Gordon is now the beat writer for the Reds, still going to do the recap. And then Gordon's also going to write a column for the recap website. And he did. He wrote one. And basically what he was writing about yesterday was that the Cubs are fucking this up and their fans should be mad at the Cubs for, you know, squandering a chance to win a very winnable division. And I simply tweeted out, Gordon has quite the gift. Even when you agree with him, you get halfway through what he wrote and go, oh, fuck this. I tweeted that. I'm going to guess 45 seconds later, I look at my phone. It's Cap. And I'm like, well, somebody's on Twitter. So I answered it, and he's laughing hysterically. He just thought it was so funny. And he's like, yeah, he's, oh, I love Gordon. He's great. Yeah, he pisses everybody off. I'm like, yeah, well, he does. And so then we just talked about the Cubs for like 5 minutes before we hung up. And, Cap was like, they just seem to think that next year is the year they're going to be good.
Next year.
Like, well, that's a very Cub, wait till next year.
I haven't heard that one.
It's all the coveted prospects will be ready by then. So you can't block any of these guys. So you can't, who are you going to do? You can't possibly. What will happen to Pete Crow Armstrong if Cody's out there in center field? Well, Cody can play first base. What happens to Michael Bush if Cody plays first base? Well, one of those guys could probably DH. Well, what happens if they sign Matt Chapman and then Matt Shaw is ready in a year? It's like there's a lot of what ifs in this question. How about this? How about you go get some good baseball players? And then if it turns out you have a glut at a position, you could trade from a position of strength. So even if the little Carter and his band of khaki-wearing nerds in the Cubs front office have all agreed that, oh, God, 2025, we're going to be amazing. You can't convince me that's any reason not to try to make the 2024 team better. Because, A, how many of these prospects are going to actually make it? Right. And then, B, even if you do, then you can use that surplus to improve other parts of your team. And Cap agreed with that. And then he had to go. I don't know. He had to do cryo or something. So I don't get it. I don't understand. It seems very clear now that the pessimists in us who, when the Cubs threw David Ross overboard and brought Craig Counsell in,
right?
Even though we got all excited and thought, all right, good. This proves they can be ruthless. They can, if they think they can improve, they're going to do it. But then we're like, you know, what would be funny is if it turns out the only reason they got Counsell is because he's one with low payrolls and they have no intention of adding to their payroll. And then that's what they've done, pretty much.
Does the marquee contract, how long does that go for? Because in other cities, people ask about the local TV contract as being a hindrance for manage, like Minnesota. Well, you know, we don't know what it's going to bring, so yeah. We're not spending.
Right. Well, here's the thing about the marquee. Because the Cubs own them?
Yeah.
Forever. There is no contract.
Right.
That's them forever. That's supposed to be an advantage, that they know how much money they're going to generate. Like they're not at the whims of their RSN. I think it's very clear that Marquee has underperformed what they thought it was going to. And that is a part of the reason they're, you know, being, what was his, they're doing intelligence spending. That was Jet. I love that. Last year he's like, oh, we're trying a new strategy, intelligence spending. Does that mean that the old strategy was just throw shit at the wall?
It's not damning or anything.
But yeah, that's another. So when I try to give Jed the benefit of the doubt, part of me thinks that there's really, it feels like there's really kind of like, there's two shoes that still have to drop in this offseason. The first one is, well, not even the first one, they could drop simultaneously, but it's the free agents who still haven't signed, but then there's also those like 10 teams who are dependent on Diamond Sports Group to give them the money that they've promised. And at some point, before they have to actually cut the first checks, they realize, okay, I know we're supposed to get $75 million from them, but we're not getting that much. There's no way.
Right.
So we got to get rid of somebody. And I kind of feel like some of those GMs are like, there's going to be good players that end up like during spring training or at the end of spring training who are suddenly available. And if we just hold on, maybe we can get one of those guys. I mean, that's why there's always the rumors, you know, because the Dolans are notoriously cheap. Not me, though. I mean, I always urge Uncle Larry to just spend whatever. I mean, come on, we want a winner here in Cleveland.
Right.
The
apple falls far from that tree, yes, in your case.
Well, I sit in the board meetings and I scream and yell, and then they're like, you're not one of these Dolans.
You're not that Dolan.
You're not invited. You have to leave now. Again. Okay, fine. But that's why you get the rumors about like Emmanuel Classe being on the market. And that's the only reason for that is Cleveland doesn't like to spend, and they might have less coming in than they even expected. And it's like, you got to get rid of somebody. Even though you wouldn't have to do it before April 1st. You could do it at midseason. Yeah. But some of these teams are going to be like, okay, fine. We got to dump some payroll because you and I both know it's not a matter of, can the owners afford it? It's just, we don't want to.
Do they want?
We don't want to run that big a deficit. We could, right, but we don't want to. So you got to go. Got to trim some payroll. It's, you know, it's not that different than the Angels' brilliant maneuvering at the deadline where they didn't trade Shohei, which they could have got the biggest haul anybody's ever gotten for a rental ever. And then they immediately fall out of the race and then realize, okay, we can't do waiver trades anymore. We'll just release all these guys. And if they get claimed, then we'll get a luxury tax. And it worked. They got under by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah.
I forget who it was. There was one guy who didn't get, one guy didn't get claimed, right? And it looked like they were going to be over, but somehow they did the math and they were just under.
Yes.
So you're going to get something, I think, like that. Maybe not to that extent, but there's going to be teams who are like, all right, fine. And then there was hope, like Amazon is going to invest in that because they want the local streaming rights for some of these teams.
Right.
But if that part of the deal goes through, it's $165 million, which, you know, to you and me, it seems like a lot of money.
Yeah.
But Sinclair's supposedly they owe like $870 million in rights fees to these, or fees to these teams. So
yeah,
that alone will not save them.
Right.
So not everybody's getting all their money. And there's still three teams, I think, that are going to have to produce their own. The Twins, right? The Twins don't have
RSN. Signed out. Their contract had run out with Valley, they signed on for one more year.
That's right. They did a pillow contract.
Right.
They got a Scott Boras pillow contract.
That kind of pillow.
Well, MyPillow. That's a Minnesota yes. company, right? I don't know how solvent that is either. So there's that. Speaking of spending, the 101-win Baltimore Orioles, who decided, nah, we're good, didn't improve their team at the deadline. They got Jack Flaherty. They got some coupons for MRIs just in case, and then they traded for him.
Right.
They went out and made a big boy trade, and they got Corbin Burns from the Brewers, and they apparently are being sold. So kind of, you know, those that news came out, I think, within like 12 hours of each other.
Something like that, yeah.
It's probably too soon to tell, but I'll ask anyway. Do we think this is a harbinger, I guess I said it right this time, of things to come for the Orioles, where they have all this good young talent, they're actually going to supplement it with proven veterans? Or is this, well, Corbin's a free agent at the end of next year, and we can just let him go and we'll go find somebody else?
Yeah. I haven't gotten the feeling that they're going to keep him, but I do think, and I think their GM is definitely, Mike Elias takes pride in doing things on the cheap and doing things, you know, getting the team how he's gotten it so far with the younger players. So I think, I don't know if he is of a mind to go out and spend lots and lots of extra money on veteran people like Burns, but I think the vibe that I get from the new owner coming in is that, you know, even though he made his money in hedge funds and that kind of thing, and I think he's going to spend money. I think he grew up an Orioles fan, so at least at first, I think he's going to be interested in adding on in that way. I don't know how like expansive it's going to be or extensive. I don't know if Burns is going to stay with them long term, him specifically, or they'll bring in other players, different free agent types. But you know, I think, and especially now, I mean, they're going to have to, because there's a couple guys showing up with arm injuries already. So you know, they're Bradish, their number two starter, and John Means is behind a little bit, and you know, he's coming off an injury anyway, so you're not 100% sure what they're going to get. The Orioles are going to have to make another, maybe not Burns, but a Burns-like trade, and I think ownership will be willing to do that. So I think the short answer, even though I gave you a long one, is yes, they'll spend a little more.
Yeah, so they've been linked to Dylan Cease now, which people have been trying to link them. It makes sense. And it was funny, it was John Greenberg who pointed out that Dylan knows he's up, his time is up with the White Sox. He just, you know, he could see that they're going to trade him. And he said how disappointed he is because he really likes Chicago. And John's like, he does remember, right, that there is another team in town. He goes, that shows that the Cubs, you know, that seems like a really, you know, even though they traded him away once, it does seem like a sensible move given their current roster.
That would
try
be.
To go get him, and everybody knows they have no interest in that. Ah, I'm not going to be doing that. So there's that. But yeah, I mean, it's this whole idea that it's almost like, because the Orioles farm system is so good and the guys they brought up have actually been as good as advertised, it's almost like there becomes a feeling then that we're just going to keep doing that.
Right.
And it's like, I take it from the 2016 Cubs. That could change really fast.
That doesn't last forever, and that phrase doesn't even cover how soon it can end.
Yes, past performance is not indicative of future results. Just like the gambling disclaimer on every ad that you ever hear. You know, it's if you have a minor league system full of prospects, if you make sensible trades with those guys, you will almost certainly do better trading them than keeping them, even if one of them turns out to be like a star.
Right.
And what you really hope is you can scout your own players well enough to know there's like the one guy. Nope, we can't trade this guy.
Not doing that.
But these guys, you know, that was, to me, was one of the biggest failings of the Theo Epstein Cubs, is that they couldn't take a clear-eyed view of some of their own prospects. Like, they were so enamored with Albert Almora that they couldn't see that he made a lot of contact, but he would swing at stuff out of the zone and he didn't hit it very hard. And yes, he was an excellent outfielder, but he's so slow that, you know, well, he catches everything he gets to. Well, yeah, he gets to about a third of what he should. And then they would never trade him. And then they ended up, you know, I think he ended up in Cincinnati. I don't remember how he got there. I think they DFA'd him. But even in the run-up after the World Series, there was supposedly this time at the near the deadline in 2017 where Theo was so upset with how the team was playing, And he was going to shake it up by trading one of the young players. And instead, he made the, ironically, he made the Dylan Cease, Eloy Jimenez trade and got Jose Quintana. And then the Cubs got hot in the second half and they made the playoffs. And then they never seemed interested in that. And then Jed never seemed interested in keeping any of them. So you had this weird thing where it just kind of slowly marched to nothing. And then they all got traded at one deadline for pennies on the dollar. And the Orioles, you could see them, if they had followed the same approach, you could see them doing a similar thing without ever winning anything.
Right.
Because at least the what the Cubs did was, for a two-year period, they went for it. They got John Lester. They tried to go for it with Jason Hayward. But they made moves. That's the other thing that I've been repeating too often lately is about the disgust with the current status of the Cubs is Jed is clearly trying to build a team that can win somewhere in the high 80s and get into the playoffs because then anything can happen. You know, it's a great thing to sell. It's easy to sell to the owner and some of the dumber fans. When the World Series team that we saw, it's been 8 years now. It's been a long time, but it's not that long.
Right.
That team was built. That team wasn't built to win 86 games and limp into the playoffs and get hot. They were built to win 100 games and kick everybody's ass.
Yeah.
You saw that work. And here's the thing. If that's your goal and you fall a little bit short, you still have a really good team. If your goal is to win 85 games and you come up a little short, you don't make the playoffs again. I don't get it. But, you know.
Well, even with the lack of multiple World Series victories, you know, the Dodgers find themselves constantly in position to win a World Series. And like you said, you know, maybe you fail, but if you lose 100 games, if you win 100 games and you still fall short of your goal, you know, if you take a cynical view of it, people have been excited for most of the year. You've made a lot of money for most of the year. It helps you sustain things. You know, it's easy to say because the Dodgers have so many resources, but that should be every team's goal to try and do that. But
they've won like what, 10 of the last 11 NL West, and the one time they didn't win it, they won 106 games, and they didn't win the division because the Giants won 107. And they're the argument to the we would love to, but we can't go over the luxury tax because those penalties are just so severe that you wouldn't be able to build a good farm system, you know, because you'd lose money in your draft pool and your international pool, and your first round draft pick goes down. So yeah, well, guess what? The Dodgers pay the luxury tax most of the time, and they're really good, and they have one of the best farm systems in baseball. They somehow have figured out how to do it. So it sounds like more of an excuse than a reason not to go over. You don't want to go over because there's a financial penalty. And it's especially the first level, it's a very weak financial penalty.
Right.
Don't you pay X percent on just the overage? It's not like they're taking your whole $239 million payroll and penalizing you. If you spend $246 million, you pay on the $7 million. You don't pay on the whole thing. But there are teams who won't go over. Like the Cubs last year, one of the reasons they didn't add a bigger relief pitcher was they didn't want to go over the luxury tax, and they were right up against it. And then, there were people who were like, they're apologists. They're like, well, see, that's actually smart, though, because now next year, they didn't go over this year. Next year, they can really go way over. Well, they're not going over again this year.
Right.
They just did it because they didn't want to, not because it was some great strategy about, well, you know, if you look over the next few years, we're going to be way over that. So every year we can, you know, the team who did it the best was a surprise was the Dodgers, who last year got under the luxury tax, still won 100 and whatever games, won the West. And then this year they just blew way past it, but they've reset it so that now they're not on year six of the penalties. They're on year zero. Next year they'll be on year one again, and they'll slowly build themselves back up.
The Dodgers put enough money into player development and scouting that that's another a talent stream. I mean, they're even though they're not necessarily picking that well in the draft, or you know, they have other limitations on maybe what they can spend and where. They still have, they're able to develop what they get better than most teams because they put the resources into it. And that's a lot of teams don't even do that.
No.
If only the Pirates would.
Yeah.
I'd feel sorry for them a little bit if they did and weren't successful.
I forget but who pointed it out. But
they pocket the tax money.
I forget yesterday somebody was like, well, the Pirates should just go out and sign Jordan Montgomery. They said, because the Pirates, they have like the lowest payroll in baseball. If they signed Jordan Montgomery, they would still have the lowest payroll in baseball. That's how low their payroll is. They could blow it out on a big free agent, and they would still have the lowest payroll. An example of the Dodgers and how this all works. So they have the trade they made with the Cubs. They traded Michael Busch and they got Jackson Ferris, who's a Class A pitcher, but who was a big deal. It was a huge deal that the Cubs, they stretched to draft him. Nobody thought he was signable, and they signed him. And they got this big left-handed pitcher in the system, and everybody's all excited about him. And the Dodgers had Michael Busch, but they have he can play first base or third base, kind of. But between DH with Shohei and Freddie Freeman at first and Mac Muncy at third, there's nowhere for Michael Busch to play.
Right.
They were not worried about blocking Michael Busch. That didn't keep him from signing Shohei. Oh, no, we got to DH this guy. They traded him for a young pitcher that goes back into the system, and that's this whole idea then, well, we can't sign a free agent because we might block one of our young guys. It's like you just made a trade with the Dodgers because they did that.
Right.
They blocked a guy, and instead of sitting on him, they traded him for something else that they needed. So, you can... The Cub front office right now, for a front office that has not won anything, I mean, Theo's gone. He's back with the Red Sox now. They still get a huge benefit of the doubt from a big part of the fan base about it's kind of like in the Super Bowl where Tony Romo, everything was genius. Do you notice that? He's used that word like 1,000 times. Oh, that's a genius decision. Oh, that's a genius, whatever. The two things he did ad nauseum was he's genius, and then I thought this was enlightening for when you think back to Tony's career. He talked about how nervous the players must be over and over and over again. It's like, Tony, they're football players. They were nervous probably until kickoff, and now it's a football game. I mean, there's a little more nerves. It's a Super Bowl, but they're doing what they do. The fact that you were so nervous that you dropped a snap and cost the Cowboys a playoff game against the Seahawks, which helped the Bears because the Bears got to play the losing Seahawks the next week. Yep. Or the Seahawks who had a losing record. They got to play them the next week. That was enlightening. Well, anyway, there's a lot of Cub fans who everything this front office does is genius. And Craig Breslow left. Oh, he's a genius. He did all these amazing things with the pitch lab. Like, all right, where are all the great pitchers? Like, Justin Steele's good now. He was in the minors for 7 years with the Cubs. It took the pitch lab 7 years to turn him into a good pitcher. And then, or Dan Kantrovitz, who almost left to go work in the Mets front office. Like, oh my God, all these great prospects. Well, Kantrovitz has done drafts with the Cardinals, the A's, and the Cubs. And you think back to the really good players, like, the A's, like Matt Chapman and Matt Olson. He didn't draft either one of them. He did draft Sean Murphy. That's like the best player he drafted with the A's. That's a good player. The Cardinals, all those great drafts, he drafted Flaherty and Waka. But then his next best player, of all of his drafts, the next most impactful player he drafted, Patrick Wisdom. But they can't give this guy enough credit for all this stuff. And it's like, I got news for you. Maybe they're not as smart as you think they are.
Right.
Maybe some of this obvious stuff they don't do. They don't do because their job is to save their owner's money. And then frame it to you as this grand strategy. And just keep buying it. Just, take it in. It's great. Speaking of the Super Bowl week. I don't know if you knew this. Super Bowl was in Las Vegas. It may have, Jim Nance may have mentioned that once or 10,000 times. The mayor of Las Vegas, Carolyn Goodman. If that name sounds familiar, it's because her husband, Oscar, was mayor. Either Oscar or Carolyn's been mayor of Vegas since the days of Mo Green and the Tropicana. at a luncheon, I guess, basically said, I think she got asked about the A's, and she's like, well, I don't know if that stadium deal is going to happen or if it's even a good deal for the for Las Vegas. The Oakland seems to want them. They should just stay there. And then she, within a couple of hours, had to issue a statement that was like, oh, no, no, of course, we welcome, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing that is rich to me, is that where, speaking of the Tropicana, the Tropicana is going to be torn down to build the A's stadium. That is not in Las Vegas proper. Carolyn Goodman is not the mayor of that part of the strip. In fact, most of the strip is Clark County. It's not the city of Las Vegas. So she really doesn't have a vested interest in, like, she's not going to see any direct cash from the stadium.
Right.
So I thought it was very funny that she was free to just, basically what she was free to do was tell the truth.
Yes.
Because it wasn't like the mayor screwing over a big building project in her city. That's not in her city. So you just look at it and go, oh, that deal's going to suck too. And I don't even think they have the money. This whole A's thing is just, it's crazy to me.
The owner of the A's is, I mean, I guess, I don't know if he's first among equals as far as fools, but he does have, you know, $1 billion. But John Fisher is just, has shown himself to be completely not competent. I mean, he can't, right now he's put them in a bind. They can't even just go back to the Oakland Coliseum without some kind of concessions, or it's not like they can just hit a renew button. I mean, he's really kind of screwed himself into, you know, there are only so many places for so long that you could have moved the A's temporarily.
Yeah.
And, you know, gotten approval from the Players Association. He's got too many people to satisfy to do that. So I don't know if this means like Salt Lake City is going to steal the A's,
yeah,
or if Oakland could still keep them long term. I don't know how this is going to end. It seems like they've backed themselves into a corner.
Yeah. It sounds like the county, Alameda County, could kick them out of the Coliseum after this year. Could basically say, if you're not staying long term, you can't play here. So then where do they play? Well, if they leave their own TV market, the San Francisco, Oakland TV market, then NBC Sports California is off the hook and doesn't have to pay them the $70 million they owe them for TV rights.
Right.
So if there was some thought they could take they had their AAA affiliate just happens to be in Vegas. They could take that park and they could try to do some upgrades and they could move to Vegas. Well, first you have to make the upgrades well enough that the Player Association approves it. And then you've got to find a TV partner 3 years earlier than you thought.
Right.
So then they're like, well, maybe what if we got special dispensation and we from the NBC Sports California and we went to Sacramento where the like AA team is. And they could play there. And then maybe we could get the best of both worlds. And they're like, well, it's not the same, and I don't know that we want to do that. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe we can ask the Giants. We could play our home games in Oracle Park. And the Giants are like, well, you could play some here, but no. There's no way we're going to let you play 81 games here. Like, you're going to have to find another home for at least for the majority of those games. So they really have screwed themselves. At least out of their own TV money, no matter where they land in the interim.
Which, and it's funny too, the Giants have, at every turn where they've had some say, they've kind of screwed the A's through the years, San Jose and so forth.
The biggest one is San Jose, right?
They could have cut
a deal to basically, because that's their territory.
Right.
To let the A's have it and somehow taken a cut, kind of Peter Angelos, with the TV net where he screwed over the Nats on their TV rights.
Right.
And they said, no, screw it. We're keeping it all. And it does behoove them because if the A's move, then the Bay Area, which I think is like the fourth biggest TV market in the country, it's all Giants now.
Well, that's what Rob Manfred said. Today's like, hey, you know, what do you say to the A's fans? He's like, well, they could just watch the Giants.
Yeah. That's just what you want to tell the A's fans. Well, and then we've got the Sox, you know, in the park that the state of Illinois paid for because Jim Thompson pushed the clock back literally like 5 minutes that they've been playing in rent free for whatever. Now that's not good enough anymore. We need to build a new park because that's gonna fix everything. To me, the funniest thing about New Comiskey, whatever it is, third rate ballpark or whatever they call it,
that's terrible.
Is that when they built it? Now the obviously the biggest complaint is the skyline is right over there,
right?
And they oriented the park in such a way that they pointed away from the skyline, and they did it because if home plate was where they put it, then it was still 35th and Shields. So they have the same address, or they have the same street, cross streets. When we all know what the real reason was, if they pointed it away from the skyline, then when they put those ridiculously huge billboards up that they've had in the outfield since the day it started, I don't know if one of them still says Tribune, but you can close your eyes to think of one of the sides giving up a home run. It's going in front of the Tribune sign. They weren't blocking the skyline. Nobody bitched. They were blocking what was left of Cabrini Green. And they wanted not that big revenue. That was by garden. Far the biggest. That was by far the biggest part of that decision. It wasn't, well, no, we got to keep the address. It was, well, shit, if we point at the skyline, everybody's going to be pissed that they can't see the skyline. So we'll just go this
You're
way.
You still could have called it 35th and Shields anyway.
Yes.
Even if that was left field.
Hell, most of their fans still call it Sox Park.
Right.
It's never been named Sox Park. Comiskey hadn't been old. Comiskey hadn't been named Sox Park for whatever.
They did rename Comiskey Sox Park for like 2 years in the 70s. I've seen they did. I don't know how long it was, but it wasn't that long.
Okay.
But it was, I mean, it wasn't, it was like 2 years, like 75, 76 before Bill Veeck came back, something like that. But your point is still largely correct.
Yeah.
It's the best kind of correct.
Yeah, largely is the best kind. But yeah, so the A's are just a mess, and it's too bad. Their mayor is happy to tell people, as this continues to like blow up in John Fisher's face, is happy to tell them, like, they're like, we actually have two ballpark plans that we can fund. Oh, it's balloon. I made balloons.
How'd you do that?
I did like the Nixon thing. Well, no, we don't record the video yet, so.
Oh. I'm not a crook.
They could build that fancy one down on the bay that they've talked about, or the most sensible one is tear down the Coliseum and then build a real park where the Coliseum was. There's a whole reason for all the problems with the Coliseum. A lot of it has to do with Al Davis.
Right.
The Raiders moved away. When they moved back, he had them by the short hairs, and he built that, what they call that ridiculous Mount Davis in center field look of the park and the views you had from the park and all that stuff. He must have gone in and tinkered with the plumbing to make it, come back up into the dugouts. but even that one requires them. That requires them to relocate for like 2 years. Because if you tear, honestly, I don't know how many people would notice if you just tore down the Coliseum and you played in the rubble for a couple of years. People might not even notice. Like, actually, it's nicer here now. What, did they tore it down? No.
I hurt myself on the rebar.
Yeah, that would be. Nick Madrigal has is impaled. He's on his day to day. He impaled himself on some rebar. So there's that. Big news this week. The baseball's commissioner, Rob Manfred, is retiring in 5 years. Thanks for the notice, Rob. We didn't want to catch anybody by surprise.
Thanks for the slow walk.
Why do you announce retirement 5 years in advance? Is it
give the A's enough time to find a place to play? I don't know.
I almost wondered if he thought they were starting to get antsy and now they don't have to oust him because he's leaving. So, well, they might get rid of me in 2 years. What if I announce I'm going to retire in five? They wouldn't even bother. They'll just let me do the 5 years. But I think owners are happy with Rob, right?
I would think so.
He takes most of the shit instead of them. He manages to squeeze money out of places that it doesn't make any sense that they want to give baseball money.
He's the real Scott Boras. You think that sounds like what you're describing?
Yeah. Maybe he'll become an agent after he retires. Probably not.
Well, I mean, he is. I don't know if it's because people look younger than they used to, but he's going to be 70 in 5 years. It doesn't seem. He doesn't look that age. I don't know if the owners can be. Maybe they're if they don't like what he did. Maybe it's not anticipating the cord cutting and how the digital rights situation has been, you know, not settled yet. Because he's got like 14 teams ready to go for a digital platform, but it's just not ready yet. I don't know if they don't like the timing on that and they want some certainty and, you know.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, but the reason that baseball, the reason that the TV package has been fucked up in baseball forever is because of the owners. Bud identified this as a problem like 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that. And he wanted to get rid of the blackouts. He's like, this is ridiculous. You know, you've got like, it's ironic that Las Vegas, where they might end up with a team, there's like six teams that are blacked out. They're blacked out from seeing.
Yeah, right.
Iowa, there's like five teams that they're blacked out from seeing. So because I don't live in the Chicago media market, I live just to the north and the west of it, I'm actually blacked out of four teams. The Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, and Cardinals. But obviously the local cable or whatever covers the Cubs and the White Sox, so I can see all the games, but I can't see the Brewers or the Cardinals. Now, when I had DirecTV and I bought the whole sports pack thing, I could watch the games. There was a way around it. But it's the Brewers and Cardinals, so I don't care. They're not doing me a favor. I can't see Chip Carey? Oh, no, that's awful. Even that's ridiculous. We're blacked out of 14. So Bud had identified that, and he identified it correctly as this is going to hurt growing baseball. If there's like some kid wants to watch, he has a new favorite team, that we can't watch them. Why? Well, their territorial rights go into here, and that means that we have to watch it through their carrier, but our carriers don't carry their carrier, and so we can't explain that to a little kid. But the reason it's the way it is because there was great value to the teams in having the local rights and having those blackouts in effect, because they could basically force cable companies to carry them.
Right.
And they could wring bigger fees out of them as a result. But then as people started to cut the cord, they weren't able to cut the same kind of deals with the same number of people. And all of a sudden people like Dish Network said, don't care. We did a survey. Most of our viewers claim they don't care if they can't get your games. So we're not paying you for it. And you're just not going to get it all. And it happened more and more and more. And the only way to fix it now is they literally have to wait for everybody's deals to expire. And when you do the new one, you don't have the exclusivity anymore.
Right.
And one of the reasons I think Rob was all excited about Diamond Sports Group going bankrupt was, well, here's a huge hunk of teams that we'll now control the rights for, and that's all they're relevant now. But Diamond is limping along, and it looks like they're going to make it through at least one more year.
Hey,
and he can't get his hands on those rights. But the reason they don't have the rights in the first place was because the owners wanted them. It was valuable to them. Now, there's some teams like the Cubs and the Yankees and the Red Sox who are like, we don't care. Everybody's going to carry us anyway. This allows us to get carried in other places. We're national brands. We want this. Go forth and multiply. And but if you're a smaller market, you didn't want that. If you were Milwaukee, you didn't want anybody to be able to watch. You know, you wanted teams blacked. You wanted the Cubs blacked out in Wisconsin, so that people had to watch the Brewers instead of the Cubs.
Right.
So, but I could. That certainly would not stop owners from complaining to Rob that it's his fault.
Right. Why didn't you do something?
Although the Cubs don't seem to, you know, I used to love it when the Ricketts first bought the team, and Crane Kenny would go out and he would say, well, one of the problems that we have is that we have terrible local TV and radio deals. They're so under market. It's embarrassing. And it's like, all right, Crane, who negotiated those deals? Well, I did. But I was working for the Tribune at the time, and it really benefited. It's like, all right, then shut up. You don't get to complain about it. You did it. It's the old, you know, might as well put the hot dog suit on. We're all trying to find the guy who did this.
Who did this?
And that guy's still there. It just amazes me.
Oh, I talk about things that I don't understand. That's just bizarre to me.
He was apparently part of this, like, at least for the first couple of years, his position was somehow, like, guaranteed in the sales agreement. Like, it was one of the conditions the Ricketts had to agree with. And it gave him 2 years to just kiss their ass, and he did it so well that he's still there.
To Is the that like, where, take care of Yosh Kawano forever?
Basically. They should at least make Crane wear the little floppy hat. That's the designated, if you, the lifetime contract comes with the little floppy hat you have to wear everywhere. At least when Theo was there, Theo basically mandated, all right, all right, Tom, Crane is business. I'm baseball. He doesn't get to meddle over here. Jed is to the point where he'll talk about how, well, you know, I sat and talked with Tom and Crane about this. Why? Why are we talking to Crane about any of this? Just make it go away. So the last thing I want to ask you about is, so I did a little thing where I decided, all right, how bad is this Cub lineup without, if they don't get Cody or replace Cody? And I did the lineup, and it was not pretty. But then I also wondered, all right, if baseball did this, if they said, all right, your rosters are frozen as of right now, we're going to start the season with this roster.
Okay.
What does the National League Central, do we think, look like if teams don't add anybody else from this point? I'll start with how I rank them.
Yeah.
I really think the Reds probably have the most talent, but because they're the fucking Cardinals, I put the Cardinals, I just know they're annoyingly, they're going to finish last year, done very little to improve their team. Sonny Gray is a good get. Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn are a waste of time. They're somehow going to win like the 84 games it takes to win the division. So I have the Cardinals, the Reds. I still have the Brewers, then the Cubs, and then the Pirates bringing things up. I think I have the Cubs right now. Now, granted, I have those top four teams would all be very close, I think. They're all very aggressively mediocre. But what do you think looking at it from?
I think if the Cubs would actually go and sign Bellinger, I would pick them first.
Yeah, I would too.
I like the Reds generally, but it's kind of they need some things to happen on their pitching side that haven't happened yet, and guys coming off injuries, and so I'm not sure if they've really accounted for that. So I guess if we froze the rosters today, I would say Reds. Boy, I don't know. Reds, Brewers, Cardinals, Cubs. Yeah, Pirates. I don't like it. I
don't think any of them are that good.
No. I mean, as much as I like what the Reds are doing, it's like, do you like this as a finished product? Absolutely not.
Well, the Reds are in a, to not quite the degree of the Orioles, but that's a team that, because they have some real good young talent, if they would go out and they would spend a little money around that, they could build a really good team pretty quickly. But they seem to be in the same Oriole thing. It's like, well, let's just see. Maybe this will just work without it, and we don't have to spend any of the money.
Right.
And then by the time you realize you need to do it, it's probably too late. If the Castellinis ever realize it. I mean, it's still the greatest opening day pep talk for fans ever. What are they going to do, root for a different team? It's like saying the quiet part out loud, because that's what all the owners think. We got these suckers. They've invested too many years of their lives to give up on us now. We'll just do whatever the hell we want.
I kind of see the Cardinals dropping back. I do.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's just I hate them. Maybe I give them too much credit. But to me, it feels like a very Cardinal thing. Right, like, because they earned that last place finish last year. They were bad, and they really haven't done that much to improve. But it just feels like, of course, it's a terrible division. So they get there and finish last place 1 year. They not that much better this year, but it's enough to squeak in because the Cubs and Reds and couldn't get their shit together, and the Brewers have just decided that they can only spend X amount, so they're constantly having to shuffle their roster around and contort themselves in weird ways to stay under an imaginary salary amount.
I've read a couple of Brewers fans talking about, you know, well, I don't think the loss of Burns will matter that much. I mean, I don't know how you say something like that. Yeah. And in terms of how many games they're going to win or lose this year, I think it matters a lot. So, and they don't have the pitching depth that they did, and they haven't added enough to the offense. I mean, we'll see. The Brewers kind of have a Reds thing going a little bit with some of their younger players. Yep. So we'll see what that looks like full time for a whole season, but I'm not sure that they have. They don't have the pitching either. So
well, and they do have the red faced Pat Murphy screaming at everybody from the dugout. So that'll be fun. I mean, that was a weird thing for. I mean, I have a feeling Craig Counsell is secure enough in himself, but he switched teams and he doesn't have any coach that he's ever coached with before.
Right.
You know, even his Ryan Flaherty's his new bench coach. He's never worked with him before. Flaherty has worked with, where did he come from? He worked with Carter, right? So he has more of an allegiance to the front office. He has more of a connection to the front office than the manager. That's great. What could possibly go wrong there?
Well, so I mean, that's certainly how a lot of teams like it, for there to be no divider.
I mean,
no curtain.
Yeah, Craig Counsell obviously much more successful than this guy, but it reminded me of one of the big red flags when there were a lot of red flags when the Bears hired Matt Nagy. One of them was the reason he was available was his offense managed to contribute to the Chiefs blowing one of the biggest leads in playoff history when Marcus Mariota and the Titans came back in Arrowhead, and all of a sudden he's available for interviews and he got the job, but he came to the Bears and didn't bring a single assistant with him from Kansas City.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bad sign.
Right.
Yeah. And there's Craig, who, because he changed when he did, and the Cubs are like, oh, we're keeping the rest of the staff. I've been like, all right. I mean, he must really, you know, at $8 million, it's papering over a lot of stuff for Craig. You got to improve the roster? Probably not. Can I bring in my own coaches? Do you have to? Remember, it's $8 million. All right, fine, whatever. Because he's not even moving. He's like going to get, like, he's just going to, like, rent a place in town. He's going to, as often as he can, he's going to go back to Wisconsin. Like, oh, this
he should get a pneumatic tube.
This doesn't have disaster written all over it, does it?
No.
All right. Well, spring training has barely started, and look at all the stuff we already had to talk about. So we'll check in again, maybe when they've played a fake game or two.
Yeah, hopefully Cody will have signed by then.
Every morning I wake up and check Twitter. I'm not going to call it X ever. I don't care. Elon, mama named it Twitter. I'm going to call it Twitter.
Yes.
And I keep waiting. And no. Sometimes I get a lot of replies to me, and I'm like, oh, it's people telling me that app. Instead, they're just making fun of something I wrote. All right. Well, thanks. And I'm glad. I feel bad for everybody having to go through what they went through at a victory parade. You should never have to do that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you and everybody was safe.
We're fine.
All right.
Everything's fine.
Many of us have herpes.
This is rough, but it's also finished.
It's fitting. It's got to be done with one of the best games of all time. Just unbelievable. Got to congratulate the Dolan family.